The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning, Bahamas, and welcome to On the Clock with Erin Green. It is Wednesday, the 3rd of February, 2021, and it is my pleasure to be here with you today. We are in the seventh year of the International Decade for People of African Descent, and we are celebrating Black History Month in the Global North. And those are two things that we should be focused on. Tomorrow I'm going to be talking a bit about Black History Month, or what I like to call Africans in America History Month. Before I start the show, I would like to send condolences to the Darkisle family, to my family, on the passing of our cousin and brother in Christ, Francis Edward Darkisle. We are all shocked by his passing. And from the Green family, we send our condolences, our love, light, and support. Welcome to On the Clock, where we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the Clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. So, just in case you didn't know, at UB today, tomorrow, and yesterday, there is a virtual symposium. It's the School of Chemistry, Environmental, and Life Sciences and COVID-19 Virtual Symposium. Today is day two. The theme is Journeying to the New Norm, and it looks like they're going to have some interesting conversations about shifts in education policy and culture, shifts in the way that we live and use technology, and the way that we are getting to about our business in the time of COVID. You can go on the UB website or UB Facebook pages to look for the links to sign up to that symposium. It looks really interesting. It seems to start in the midday, give you enough time to sign up. That's the School of Chemistry, Environmental, and Life Sciences COVID-19 Virtual Symposium. Boy. So today I wanted to talk about agriculture, but I say, you know what? Y'all probably busy looking out for juju trees since the season is almost finished. So yesterday I saw a picture of a dead rodent in an ad for rat poison, right? And the rat looked like it was half as long as a 5-gallon water bottle. And it was in somebody's house. And I was going to post a joke about it, but we shouldn't joke about animal cruelty. And we shouldn't use rat poison either, because it can kill more than the animals that ingested initially. But if you've ever had a rabbit-sized rat in your house, you understand the dilemma. The correct way to deal with rats, though, is not rat poison. It's to properly dispose of trash and waste. That's it. The proper way to deal with rats is that we need to change the way we live on the land. And when we do that, the rats' behavior will also change. You see that book I recommended, the book that we're going to, you know, I want you guys to, if you can reach out, find a copy, go online, find a free PDF version, print sections at a time, The Botany of Desire. The Botany of Desire examines our perceptions as humans about our relationship with plants and the world around us. And while humans, we typically think that we make things in our environment adapt to us, the truth is, these things in our environment are making us adapt to them. Right? You can look at orchids. Orchids adapt to their environment. The the more exposed an orchid space, right, an orchids become, they shift, they change, they evolve slowly to change the way they look, to be able to hide better in their environment. So, I think it's really simple. If we change the way that we live, if we change our behavior, the rats will also change their behavior. I know a lot of y'all are going to say, well, it's just nasty people. Nasty people has caused rats. But it's not just about nasty people. We need to organize our personal lives, and we need to organize ourselves as communities. We need to take responsibility for what we consume and what we discard and how we discard it. More importantly, waste management is bigger than one person. It's bigger than one person can manage. It requires communal and state infrastructure. It requires policy and public engagement and easy access to efficient services. Apartments should be equipped with appropriate-sized garbage bins in units and secure an adequately sized disposal and storage bins and structures externally. We need to compost organic waste, whether individually or collectively. We need public and private sector initiatives to manage, recycle, and repurpose waste. It requires education, and it requires re-education. It requires access and space to access to space and resources. And it requires political will and vision and a commitment to change at the personal, communal, and national levels. Now, see, I am committed to the rat management issue because the rats and the raccoons in my neighborhood have teamed up. They have a union, and they didn't invite me to the union, and they're working against me. And just recently, they were having a meeting in my yard, sort of like a prospective meeting, checking out the progress on the mango tree, the dilly tree, the tomatoes we get planted. They got a union, right? So I am invested in this issue personally because I like eating locally grown things, things grown in my own yard. But as an agricultural business person, I'm very invested in this. And so as we look at today's headlines and we see that election season has started, and we see lists of names of people who are vying for our attention to get hired by us for this job, I wonder if they understand the extent of the job they applying for. You see, because that little rat problem, most people just think, rat problem, buy rat poison, that'll deal with it. But I hope I've given you a sense of how complex the issue is and how multi-layered the response required is. And I hope that these politicians and these wannabe politicians and these aspirant politicians, I hope they get a sense of just how grand and complex this thing is. Kermit, can we roll to a break? So on the other side of this break, guys, we're going to come back and they're going to throw out a poll question so we could talk about what these guys think they up for and, in for in the upcoming season. We'll be back on the clock with Erin Green in a moment.
It's happening, and it's all straight talk with no chaser. As Stephen Miller is unleashed on your radio each weekday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., right here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It's going to be smart talk, ideas, and innovation. Each weekday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., only on Guardian Radio, the station for fresh news and smart talk. Trust me, you're not going to want to miss this.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good for nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police want find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pinstall and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl, everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried it the other day, and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick round the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau Commons.
Good morning, Bahamas, and welcome to On the Clock with Erin Green. Welcome back. You're listening to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming live audio and video on GuardianTalkRadio.com. Listen on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 96.9 or on Flow TV Channel 612, or download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices. And listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right here on the Guardian Radio app. Text us on the Guardian Radio text line, 422-GR96. That's 422-496, powered by BTC. Standard text rates apply. Call us at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 326-4259. So when we went to the break, my guest let me know that she is ready to start. We have the Ministry of Health's immunization team coming on today to discuss the standardized immunization campaign. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. Thank you, ma'am. So,
that's good.
Tell us about the campaign.
Okay, the campaign was started, or at least where we've started it, because, you know, we had the pandemic and still working with the pandemic from last year. Normally, we would have like scheduled times for persons to bring in their children for their vaccines. And because of the pandemic, we realized that some of the parents were reluctant to bring their children into the clinics in order to get their scheduled vaccines.
Okay.
We know that in the Ministry of Health, that each child that is born in the Bahamas, irregardless of nationality or whatever, they're expected to receive a minimum of 3 doses of vaccine before they turn 1. And the vaccine would be multiple different types of vaccines that would be offered. But if they don't get those 3, then it would mean then that if the disease should resurface in the Bahamas, then it would mean that they would be likely to be exposed to getting the disease. Now, we know we have a very good high coverage of protection because we were maintaining over 90% of the vaccines that were expected, 95% of the children being immunized.
Yes.
In the Bahamas. So it would have caused the extra 5 to 10% that were not immunized, it would cause them to develop what we call a herd immunity, because the majority of the children would have been protected.
Right, right.
But there are still those who are not protected, and they can get it. And you know, with us being a tourist-oriented place,
right,
with persons
the
can
of
come from countries where the disease is prevalent, and they could end up exposing our unprotected children. And mm-hmm. we don't want that to happen. Now, we also have a vaccine like the measles, mumps, and rubella that's given at age 1.
Right.
And then a repeat dose again at age 15 months. So we want our children, that group is a crucial group to us. Like children under age 1 getting 3 doses of the vaccines that are required for them.
Yes.
And the 1-year-old getting the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. Now, all of the others, once they've gotten the required doses up to age 15 months,
mm-hmm.
then it would mean that they will get booster doses as required at a later date.
Okay.
But it's important for them to get the basic immunization requirements. And once they get those, then they should be protected against the vaccine preventable diseases. Now, like I said, because we were having persons who were defaulting, meaning they didn't come because of COVID, they might have been fearful, we are encouraging them to please, please, please bring your children to the clinic in order to obtain the vaccine. Now, even if it means them having to call and schedule an appointment so that they won't have to be waiting too long or whatever, they can do that, but we want to encourage them, please, to come out.
And what is that what is that process? Do I just call my nearest clinic or?
Okay, most times when a baby is born, the mother is given an appointment card to report to their clinic, be they private or public. They are given an appointment card to take their child to the clinic. So normally we try to encourage persons to attend the clinic in their area. And then the private would choose whichever physician they want to take their child for their vaccine. Once they are given that appointment, then we are encouraging them to take their child to that clinic.
Okay.
If they have started going to a facility and they move out of that area, they are still that clinic's child until they reschedule to go to the clinic in their area.
Okay. So if you have moved since your last visit, return to the original clinic and then make arrangements to be registered at a new clinic.
Correct. Because if they were to go just show up at the clinic, then it would mean they would be defaulting at their main clinic. And we don't want that to happen.
Absolutely.
We want to make sure that the children are seen and that they receive the required vaccines.
Right, and for the sake of record keeping, you know, we want to keep track of people in the system.
Correct, because there's a copy of the vaccines that are given that's kept at the clinic wherever they attend. So if they show up at a clinic and only get one shot there and one shot at another clinic, it means that there's not continuity of the main file.
Yeah.
And we'd like the main file to more or less follow them with the information.
Absolutely.
Now, each parent after the vaccine is given is normally given an immunization card. And I want to stress the importance of parents securing that card because that card is going to follow them right on through life. And when they were to go to college, they may need to produce that card to say what vaccines they would have gotten, which vaccines they are due. So it's important for parents to really secure their documents.
Absolutely.
In a safe place.
I recommend to people all the time, start small. If you can't afford a safe or a lockbox, start with Ziploc bags.
That's right.
And waterproof them. Right?
Yes,
and then keep them all in one place so you know where they are. And in case of an emergency, you can pick them all up one time and move them.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Now, I don't know if you want me to talk a bit about the vaccines that the children would get.
Please.
Okay, there are different types of vaccines that the child would normally get under age one, and that would be diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, polio, hepatitis B, rotavirus, and pneumovax vaccine.
That's
a whole mouthful.
Yes, ma'am.
Go on. And we have a lot of different diseases that we are protecting them against.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the child may get multiple little sticks, but in those little sticks, they would have gotten all those protective, they would have gotten the protection that they need for those various diseases. And they are preventable just by obtaining the vaccine, the injection or the drops. And it's important, you know, children may cry a little bit when they get the stick, but that doesn't mean that we're harming them in any way. Okay? We mean well. The ministry means well. And I must commend the immunization team over the years for them going the extra mile ensuring that the children are protected. And like I say, because of COVID last year, the pandemic, and possibly even this year, we had like a drop in the numbers. Mm-hmm. And we'd like those children to please return for their vaccine. It's important.
So a quick question. If I'm a parent and say I've missed a scheduled shot, I'm sitting, you know, I'm sitting at home thinking, oh, well, I already messed it up. It don't make any sense to go in now.
No.
Is that true?
No, that's not true. Please come. We're expecting you. Wherever you've missed, whatever shot you've missed, when you return, we will catch that. We will give that child that vaccine that's due. But if you miss and keep on wanting not to show up, then it would mean that child could miss the whole series, the whole protective energy that we're going to put in order to ensure that those children would get the vaccines that they need. And when it's time for them to go to school, that's another issue. They're not up to date, and they may be reluctant to take them into school. So we don't want to wait until they get age 4 or 5 entering school to complete the vaccines that they should have completed under age 1. So parents, I'm insisting that you please bring your children for at least 3 doses of the vaccines that they need under age 1. And then they would get measles, mumps, and rubella twice at age 1. That is at age 1, like 12 months, and then again repeated at age 15 months. And that protection should be, once they've gotten that, they'll be protected more or less for life. But they will also get like booster doses of diphtheria and tetanus and pertussis later on. Mm-hmm. And every adult who have not gotten a tetanus injection, you're expected to get a tetanus injection every 10 years once you've completed your series until you die. There's also the flu vaccine that we try to encourage persons to get once a year. And remember, the flu vaccine now is a vaccine that's given in order to prevent the strain of the virus that's expected to come out for that the year after the vaccine is produced. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to come, and once they've gotten that vaccine, then they should be protected against the new strain of the flu that's expected.
Okay.
All of those vaccines that I have mentioned, mm-hmm, will prevent illnesses, disability, and also death. So please encourage, I'm encouraging the parents, do your part and we'll have a healthy society.
Absolutely. Is there an office where people who are not necessarily tech savvy or have access to a printer at home, is there an office where people can go and pick up a hard copy pamphlet with information about immunizations, with the process and with the requirements? Like, another question I was supposed to ask you, what are the requirements? When I come to the appointment, what do I need to have on me?
Okay, when they come to the appointment, normally they would need to bring an ID. Now, if they don't have an ID, a birth certificate for the registration process to say this child is the child of, mm-hmm, who the individual is. Now, if they don't have that, they can also come with the appointment card that they may have been given from maternity or from the private provider who would have seen them. Once they bring that in, there'll be a registration process. They'll be registered in the system, but they will have to bring a government-issued ID, either the birth certificate or later on, they'll get their NIB card or whatever. Once they bring that, that will determine who this child is. We don't want someone bringing a child and saying, that's my child, and it's not. We want identification to prove that this child is the child of that individual. But if we have like sometimes guardian or grandparents would bring the children, we're not going to discourage that. And no child will be turned away. Immunization offered in the Bahamas is free. Mm-hmm. So we want to encourage persons to come.
Now, Ms. Fox, somebody tell me a juju a day will keep the doctor away. Is that an appropriate immunization program?
No, that's not an appropriate immunization program. That will probably boost their immune system, mm-hmm, but that's protection that we will get from a vaccine, no.
All right.
And we encourage persons eating our fruits and vegetables, but that will not provide the kind of protection that they need against the various viruses or bacteria.
So in conjunction with, not as opposed to, right?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
I want to encourage them to eat their fruits and vegetables. Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Ms. Fox, I have a caller on the line.
Okay.
Let me take a call.
Yes.
Caller, you're on.
Hey, Aaron, good. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Morning.
And morning to your producer. Can you hear me?
He right there. He say, what's up?
Oh, I didn't hear her.
Oh, we have a guest on this morning. Ms.
Right.
Deborah
sorry,
Fox.
I say morning to your guest.
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Yeah, sorry, but that had me, madam. My bad. Listen, madam, I have two questions for you. What about adults who cannot find their card? Like, for me, I had my I born in 1961. And secondly, do you really need them? Because I never hear nobody ask for your card. I don't know if Aaron Green, you hear someone say, or when you go to a hospital, go to a private clinic, where's your card?
Well, I was planning a trip to go to a conference in Africa on the continent. And I, fortunately, the state I was going to didn't require the card, but some of the countries required you bring your immunization card with you to prove, you know, to provide proof.
But can you find them?
Okay.
I mean, from all those stages.
Okay, I got you. That's a great first question. What do you do if you've lost your immunization card? Yes.
Okay, there is a site where most of the immunization cards, especially for New Providence, are stored. And that is at Blue Hill Road Clinic. In fact, we have records dating back as early as 1913.
Okay,
you were born in 1961, so chances are your record is right there.
And what happens to chances it's not there?
Okay, if it's not there, then in that case, that individual who record cannot be found will then commence the immunization that they should have gotten, that they don't have proof that they've gotten. That will not cause a problem for the individual. It is better for you to be over immunized than under immunized. So if you have no record, no proof, it will not harm you to be immunized. You could receive the same vaccine all over again, but having proof, which means that you'll have a written immunization card stating that, yes, I have received these vaccines, and
okay,
now I am protected.
My final question, you sound rusty to Aaron Green, you have an hour, like I said. My final question, Aaron, and I hang up on this one. She's going to answer it. A lot of folks have migrated into this country from way back, and information come on my desk, they've never been immunized at all. Should some campaign begin to work on trying to immunize them, because it could be a problem decades to come? You could answer a question, Aaron. I just see you're not right.
Yeah.
You can't kill the rat. They don't kill snake too, because they all have a purpose.
Yeah, exactly.
When you need to discuss that one day, you write me on your show.
Yes, sir.
Have a good day.
Thank you. And so, Ms. Fox, I think
the migration question.
Yeah,
you don't. Based on our experiences, usually persons who migrate to the country, they are the ones who normally take their children for their vaccines. They are the ones who will come religiously, because that is a document that will show that they were in the Bahamas at such and such a time.
Yes,
that will probably benefit them later when it comes time for them to get some status.
Right.
But normally they come.
Right. And it also speaks to a different culture, right? Or
right,
a culture
right.
we don't expect. But that's great, because the point is all of us have to maintain a particular level to keep
right.
the collective safe.
Yes.
Yes.
We do. And each individual is responsible for themselves, you know. I am responsible for protecting me and my children so that they will not get the diseases that are out there.
Absolutely.
And if everybody do their part, our nation will be protected against those diseases. Like I say, for a long time, we've not had those diseases present because of our high immunization coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want the coverage now to drop to a level where exposure will be so easy that individuals will be will end up getting the infections and mm-hmm. the diseases. We don't want those to happen.
Yes.
Normally, we don't see people around with polio, like the ones who would have had the limp. We don't see that. I have known of persons who have had measles, mumps, and rubella, who have had lockjaw, tetanus. But we don't see those diseases now because of the high immunization coverage protection rate we've had or we have in the Bahamas. So we want to encourage every mother, every guardian, every parent who's responsible for a child, especially those under 1 and 1 year old, to make sure that those children go and get their vaccines. And all other risk groups, like the elderly, the persons with CNCD, meaning chronic non-communicable diseases, the persons who have immunocompromising conditions, like cancer and asthma and you name it,
yes,
all those persons to get their flu vaccine every year.
Absolutely. And in the time of COVID, are there protocols now where for people who cannot leave their homes or should not leave their homes to go into high-risk spaces, is there a protocol for a home visit for the flu vaccine?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, that could be arranged. Like I say, all the person needs to do is to contact the clinic nearest them. We have teams of nurses, teams of doctors who I'm sure a visit can be arranged.
Yes.
Of course, the nurses or the healthcare providers who go in will end up putting on the right kind of clothing to protect them from getting COVID. But home visiting can be conducted, yes.
Yes. Dr. Fox, I have another caller on the line. Caller?
Sure, go ahead.
You're on the clock.
Good morning, Aaron Green.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning to your guest.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, when you say that, I mean, to your guest, yeah, when you say that everybody is mandated to take the tetanus shot every 10 years, that mandate is from who?
Well, actually, that is a schedule that we have from the World
schedule.
Health Organization. Mm-hmm. It's no.
Okay,
it's suggested that individuals take the tetanus injection because we know after 10 years that the protection for that illness is no longer as strong as it should be.
Okay, my question is,
and most persons probably would not have even known that they should have gotten a tetanus injection every 10 years. But I'd like to now put that out in the community. That is a vaccine that is encouraged for persons to get until they die. We've had elderly persons who have gotten tetanus, lockjaw, and end up dying because they didn't. Their protection level was not high.
And we don't have a culture of maintenance, so we get plenty rusty nail and old rusty metal sticking out of here, and people walking
mm-hmm.
barefoot.
Mm-hmm. That is so true.
If you can reduce the risk, reduce it.
Yes.
Dr. Fox, anything more to share? Well, I got one more caller. Caller, you're on the clock. Caller, I can't hear you, caller. You gone? Okay. Dr. Fox, do you have any last words to leave us with? Any instructions? Or actually, I got one last question for you.
Go ahead.
Where can I find more information about the campaign? Is there a Facebook page? Does the Ministry of Health have a Twitter feed? Or can I go to the Ministry of Health's website?
Go to the Ministry of Health's website, but mm-hmm. we also have a health education arm of the Ministry of Health.
Mm-hmm.
And that building is located on Virginia and Augusta Street in the Capitol House building. And they have all sorts of pamphlets already prepared for distribution for individuals to get information.
Right. And for community organizations and organizers, Please, if you know there's a need in your community, go to on Virginia and Augusta Street and get the information and distribute it, disseminate it through the constituency offices, distribute it at your local bar, anywhere you know people hang out. Help to share the information.
Yes, yes.
Thank you, Dr. Fox. Like I said, leave us with what you think we should know most about this campaign.
Okay, the campaign is to encourage all persons who may have defaulted or not shown up for their vaccine that was scheduled last year, mm-hmm. or even the year before. All persons who think, well, oh, I may have missed a shot, so, you know, chances are I could just go by the way. No, we want to encourage all of you who may have not shown up for a vaccine to please make an appointment at your nearest clinic in order for you to go and get your vaccine. Mm-hmm. Now, there's the adult immunization arm of the clinic that's scheduled at Blue Hill Road Clinic right now. They're currently on. So as soon as that clinic reopens, the adult immunization program will continue. But if you're due a vaccine, or even if you're traveling for the yellow fever and you need the yellow fever in order to travel vaccine, mm-hmm. you need to please contact the clinic nearest you, and you will be able to get the vaccine that's due you. If you're not sure which vaccines, whether you're up to date, contact the clinic. They would be able to tell you. And once you have your immunization card, they would be able to give you exactly what it is you need or the child needs.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fox, from the Ministry
My
of
pleasure.
Health Immunization Unit. I got to go see a doctor because I know that I have missed the last 7 years of my can't-go-to-bed-itis vaccine. And it's been doing bad things to me. But
okay.
I got to get on my own schedule, in particular like things like the tetanus shot. I haven't taken the tetanus shot in a very long time. So okay. I'm going to go to my clinic and see if I could get this can't-go-to-bed-itis under control. Do you have a vaccine for that, Dr. Fox?
No, we don't have a can't-go-to-bed-itis. No, we don't have that.
No, I have that problem.
Yeah. People want to just take in and do all the sorts of things within 24 hours more than what they need. Yeah, no. You have to go to bed. You have to rest yourself.
Yeah, you have to let go of the stimulants.
Yes. Okay?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much.
All right. My pleasure.
Have a
good day.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Good morning, guys. That was Dr. Deborah Fox from the Ministry of Health. And as we close out this segment, I want to remind you to get active. Join the Get Active promotion. Get up, get out, and get active. Four platforms to enter. Over 40 winners will be announced. Take your photo or video with a copy of the Nassau Guardian. Log on to guardiantalkradio.com. Click on the Get Active link. Download and invite your friends to vote on your entry, and you can win. Remember, promotion ends February 26th. Get active. I see I've got a caller on the line. Caller, you're on the clock. Caller, you still there?
Yes, how you doing?
I am good, thank you, sir.
Awesome. Is Dr. Fox still there?
No, Dr. Fox has left, but I imagine that Dr. Fox may still be listening. So I say ask the question, because it may be an awesome, awesome question that she needs to hear, even if she can't give you an answer.
Right. Well, it's also, I wanted her to, and well, that's a good thing you said just now, because suggesting it, that is. Maybe when she do more shows, she can speak more to assure the Bahamian people, because she really satisfy my personal curiosity on a lot of questions today, and I thank her for that. However, when she do more shows, if Dr. Fox could speak more to the issue when it comes to vaccines, and let her public know that they must not be afraid to take these vaccines. And the people, and I need her to know, the people are a little skeptic right now with vaccines because a very powerful person in the world had made some comments that are now global that have interfered with the psyche of colored-minded people and in the colored nations. And so I thank her for this show. I thank them for this show. I thank Guardian for the show, especially you, Arian. It's definitely on the clock. So I'm not going to take up much more time, but other than to tell her thank you and to do more assuring that we must not be afraid to take our vaccines and our medications. Okay, I want to talk some more about health on your show. I'll just stop right there for now. But thank you very much for this opportunity.
Yes, sir. And I'm going to give you another opportunity to talk about health in the upcoming weeks.
There you go.
I definitely want to focus on
that. That's what we're all about.
Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am. Good day, everyone.
Good day. There was also another text that came in. I didn't necessarily want to read it on air because I'm not certain that it's Dr. Fox's responsibility. But it was a question about the digitization of medical records, right? And the convenience that would cause in our systems, and in particular, the ability for people to continue their schedule even if they've changed locations, right? What I do know is that the government is engaged in a digitization program where they intend to digitize government services, right? For convenience for consumers, us, the clients, and for ease of business on their technical side. And so for those people who are responsible for that initiative, please prioritize, find a way to prioritize the digitization of these types of records. I think that would be a great deal. I also got a text that came in earlier about the garbage trucks, and it's a good one. It says, Aaron, in our area, the garbage truck has been on a committed schedule for a long time now. Therefore, my immediate neighbors, on encouragement from me, have adapted the BSTR protocol. Be smarter than rats. It's simple. Keep all food scraps in your freezer until Monday or Thursday when the now efficient garbage truck comes around. We have very few rats in our area. Not far from you. Boy, look here, when you said the schedule, I know what you're saying. And, you know, what I realize living where I live is that a lot of people don't really think about it, right? Like they think that just because they secured the bin itself in a gate with a lock to protect it from dogs, right, that's sufficient. What they don't realize is the rats don't need to turn the garbage bin over to get to the garbage. And so it's not just about preventing the dogs from getting to your garbage and making it available to rats. It's available to rats. How do you deter the rats from getting into the garbage? One of the solutions that we used was when we couldn't secure our bin, we would put ground cayenne pepper in the first bag. We would use a double bag and put cayenne pepper in the second bag and then sprinkle cayenne pepper around the garbage bin, which would deter the dogs from turning the bin over. The double bags would deter the rats from getting into the bags. But that's too much bag, right? And so you're right, be smarter than rats. For instance, the grocery bags that we used to use for garbage that are now banned unless they hit the biodegradable standard, I think, those are not sufficient for putting your garbage out by itself. That can't deter no rat. You ain't keeping anything inside that bag. Now, you could use that inside your house to collect garbage and then put it into a larger garbage bag. It's like I say, it's not that people are nasty, and it's not even that people are stupid or ignorant. It's just that they haven't thought about it. They haven't considered it. And the example I gave yesterday about farming and agriculture and the COVID protocols, you know, indicated that. We don't have stupid people working in our government. Is that I think what it is we have people that lack empathy and don't necessarily think about the lived experiences of the lives they're creating policy for. Which is why I wanted to talk about these ratified candidates, and whether they really understand the extent of the job they have ahead of them. Even in our discussion on immunization, the campaign is really to encourage people to get back onto their schedules. It's a campaign to shift culture where people were deterred from coming in for various reasons. Fear of contracting COVID or another illness, the inconvenience due to the limited access to services during the time of COVID, and for some people, a developed concern around vaccines, right? But all of these things that we could deal with and deconstruct with a campaign that aims to shift or create a culture of appreciation for the importance of vaccines, and more importantly, for children maintaining their immunization schedule. Right? And so I want to know if these BIDEM, because you don't even qualify for honorable BIDEM yet. That's the new ones. Y'all don't qualify for honorable BIDEM yet. I want to know whether y'all really take this thing seriously and you understand the extent to which you are required to act and to think and to practice things like empathy and to engage emotional intelligence. Because it seems like your colleagues are having a difficult time with that. I'm just looking at the Tribune today and the Guardian, looking at the story about corporal punishment to end in children's homes, Campbell says. Following a recent incident at the Children's Emergency Hostel, corporal punishment will cease in children's homes at the recommendation of the National Child Protection Council, Minister of Social Services Frankie Campbell said yesterday. And I paused right there and I thought, I got to go check the laws, but a young lawyer recently addressed this issue and indicated that corporal punishment is already prohibited in these facilities. And so I'm going to interrogate that question in a second, but I got a caller. Caller, you're on the clock.
Good morning, Erin Green.
Good morning.
You're a woman who traveled the world. You ever had an apartment with a garbage disposal?
No. I've visited and stayed with friends that have had garbage disposals.
Yes, that solves the food. All your food gets grind up and goes into the sewer.
Yes.
The problem is wasted food. Remember that electric toilet pot cake outside the door?
Yeah.
That old rice, the hot old rice, that leads to rats.
Mm-hmm.
Food. They old rats are the scavengers. But with Alzheimer's, they are the big bad cats. No more. That used to kill the rats. And I think the cats killed the rats.
Yeah.
But rats carry, I lost a very expensive Rottweiler dog. He used to run behind the rats. And he said, the doctor said something, what long name. The doctor, he got jaundice, some poison that they carry, some poison. The rats carry in them. And, you know, and if you eat them all.
Sounds like I lost you, caller. I'm sorry. The cats, a lot of cats are afraid of rats now. I'm going to tell you all a story about how in the time of COVID, the rats in my neighborhood or in my neighbor's neighborhood had reduced access to food and how they turned to eating noni. And I scared for the other animals in the neighborhood now. I've got another caller on the line. Caller, you are on the clock.
Adrian, I had to call about it because I really want to talk about the politics.
Yeah, yeah.
That was interesting, so I had to call back, talk about that. You're right. We need to have quality people heading into this general election. And I must say, the people who the PLP chose so far, they look at it as quality, because you need quality of action, quality of movement. It's sad, though, when some folks will go to lobby, then go to Parliament and stop, like the Minister of Environment, because he had good potential. And all the environment he talked about when he hosted the show, Morning at Sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
I said, this is a good fellow to really represent the environment, because one of the things I wanted to see is all yard by law be landscaped and all junk. That didn't accomplish. And a lot of the things that are supposed to be accomplished, including the Environmental Act, is not on the table.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I still give him a chance. But you want politicians or candidates, when they go to your action, don't go on your death for the name and the honor. A lot of them go there for caring for that, the honor and the name. And it's so sad. You go there for the honor and the name. At the end of the day, when you look back, you haven't done nothing for your generation to come. You just go on there for the honor and get an invitation at the government house and get a ministerial post.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
but you
bad.
Don't go. You know why it's called the honorable by them? Because I don't know, you know, I want them to interrogate. How do they become honorable? When you get that name, the honorable, it's almost as if they think by getting the title that they will automatically become honorable.
Mm-hmm.
And if
you do nothing for my area, don't come back to my gate.
And even that, you know, for me, it's not that. You don't have to necessarily do, it's not about not doing anything for the area. I want you to come and tell me why you can't do the thing that you said you were going
to
do.
And you don't need to go to, listen, if I was an MP tomorrow, I have so many connections globally, locally, I don't need the government to do something for my area.
Mm-hmm.
You have connections that people are willing to come in internationally with money, friends, and build your area.
Yeah. But I can be honest with you. I think the political culture, the prevailing political culture overwhelms them when they get into power, right? First of all, a part of it is this, I think, this sort of belief that when you start the job, you're going to get the superpowers, right? Like when you put on the suit, you're going to get the superpowers. But these by them were superheroes without the suit on, right? Like the suit, except for Batman, because I don't know, Batman's superpower is money, right? But they feel like they get the powers when they put on the suit and don't really realize what is required of them to be regarded as honorable men and women that the title conveys on them. See, this whole thing about corporal punishment to end in children's homes, I will say right now, I need to personally look at all the legislation and confirm what I believe to be true, that corporal punishment is already prohibited by law in these care facilities, right? We need to look into that, because if we're going to charge the women who delivered the punishment, then we also need to interrogate who told them, were they told that it was okay? Were they told that corporal punishment is allowed? Right? And who told them that? And who is not providing oversight to ensure that the law, you know, the behavior follows policy, which follows law, which follows the Constitution? Who are those people who are responsible? But here's the more important link for me, right? Because I am less concerned about political personalities and more concerned about political culture, right? Is a little while ago, the last year or the year before, the Minister for Social Services, in response to a question about marital rape and indictments and issues like that, his response was, the first 6 years of the month, I spend minding my own business. And the next 6 years, first 6 months of the year, I spend minding my own business. And the next 6 months of the year, I can spend staying out of other people's business. Right? That's funny. It's shade. It's cute. But you actually are responsible for providing oversight. Your job is to be in people's business. And so I want these new young Biden to know that not only is that sort of glib, trivial engagement unacceptable, but this is the level of critique that you are going to face when you offer for governance. Anyway, we got to roll in. Well, we had the end of the show, people. We had such a wonderful call with the Ministry of Health. I really enjoyed it. And I will say it saved some of you guys, because this wasn't the only story I was looking at today. Hopefully I could get back to more of this tomorrow. It's been my pleasure, Bahamas. You have been On the Clock with Erin Green. Stay tuned into Guardian Radio 96.9 FM for Unleashed with LeVan Miller. Thank you.